Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Anna Sale, and for Brian Lehrer, who's on vacation. As you just heard, Governor Cuomo is facing questions about his penchant for secrecy. He came into office last year promising transparency in his inauguration speech.
Any relationship is only as good as the level of trust, and we have lost the trust. And we're not going to get it back until we clean up Albany and there's real transparency and real disclosure and real accountability and real ethics and real ethics enforcement. That's what the people have voted for. That's what the people deserve.
Real transparency and real disclosure and real accountability, the governor said. So why do we have two recent editorials in the New York Times and the Albany Times Union taking him to task over his secrecy? And why is one of the state ethics commissioners threatening to resign? Joining me to talk about this, Cuomo's possible national aspirations, and the yogurt summit, of course, is Ozzie Pabra, a one-time WNYC reporter, now with Capital New York. Welcome back to the show, Ozzie.
Thanks for having me.
Sure. So you covered that inauguration speech, Ozzie. At this point, how would you evaluate Governor Cuomo's record on real transparency and real disclosure?
I mean, I believe there's a huge discord between how reporters are viewing what Cuomo said about what he would do on transparency and what he and the administration are actually doing and how they justify it. If you go back over some of the campaign promises and some of the booklets that Cuomo put out while he was campaigning, there were a lot of impressions given that what was going to happen was a drastic and radical change in Albany, in the hopes that if more people knew what was happening, better things would be happening. There's this assumption that nobody questions about Albany, that the people that we send up to the state capitol would behave a little bit better if more people knew exactly what they were doing. And what Cuomo had said was, we're going to bring in more sunlight. We're going to use technology to inform people about what's going on because they just don't understand. And once they learn, you'll see things turn around. And in some ways, he actually has done that. He proactively put out his schedule so you can see where he's going for public events. And he proactively did that for – even though it took several months to put out some of those schedules. There always seems to be a step in the right direction, and then for critics, a step in the wrong direction when it comes to Cuomo and transparency.
So you're saying journalists and the Cuomo administration might have different definitions for what transparency actually means?
You know, there was a great exchange once that Cuomo had with an Albany radio host where he said, you know, the truth is complicated. The truth isn't just yes or no. The truth is like in these details that you just can't get into in 140 characters. So I believe Cuomo believes what he's doing is actually is in the guise of transparency, but there are he's right in the sense that it's more complex. But what I think the administration has done is focus on one part of the problem rather than what we've now seen as to be a bigger problem.
So let's get into some of those complicated
Sure.
details of the truth. I mentioned the state ethics commissioner who threatened to resign. That's Ravi Batra, over the decision that a new ethics law doesn't require disclosure for who's given money prior to July 1st. And that just happens to be when Governor Cuomo's group, the Committee to Save New York, raised and spent millions in advertising for things that aligned with the governor's agenda. So we don't get to know who gave to that committee now, right?
Right. And Cuomo's explanation is you don't make laws retroactive. It's not fair. People might have done things differently if they knew that this was going to happen. And that really stands in contrast with the way he campaigned. Hmm. And it's true that people campaign in prose and they campaign in poetry and govern in prose. And if you look back at the things he had said when he campaigned, he said that transparency is good. He didn't qualify it. He didn't say, well, it's only good in this area and not over here. He spoke to people's idea that they should know exactly what's happening behind closed doors. And just before coming on the show, I went over some of the things he said. And he said, you know, critical decisions are being made behind closed doors without public input or adequate deliberation. That sounds like somebody that wants cameras in during a negotiation meeting. We actually haven't seen anything like that from Albany. You know, he said, we must address the inappropriate influence that companies and individuals that do business with the state have over elected representatives. That's an actual quote that he had. And he said, all too often we see campaign contributors pay officials. And he's leading people to believe that if you understood where the money was going and how it influenced elected officials, they would stop doing it. And people wouldn't let them get away with it, that they'd be ashamed.
But transparency is good for the system.
Right. And what is fascinating is that he made – when he actually did propose any level of detail about what he wanted to change, it was about campaign committees and the housekeeping committees and very known problems where people can send money directly to a campaign committee that an elected official controls. What he didn't address and what has exploded as an issue nationally are groups that are not campaign committees, groups that act independently of an elected official, a committee to save New York, a 501c3.
Independently, we'll put in quotes in this case.
We will put them in quotes. You are running the show. You can put it in quotes. And the idea is that these are independent. I don't control them. And they are not they're not in the same rubric as a campaign committee. They're sort of this new entity that laws haven't fully come around to addressing.
So just to get to what we know about the Committee to Save New York, mm-hmm. some has trickled out. Tell us what we know about who gave and what we will not know, because this is not retroactive in terms of disclosure.
What we know, what we don't know, and what we don't know, we don't know. Uh-huh. Three wonderful categories. We know that business groups that, like Cuomo's ability to restrain state spending, have donated money there. We know, according to published reports, that Cuomo has actually suggested and invited people to send money in that direction. What we don't know are basically who said, yes, I agree with that, here's a check, and here's for how much. We also don't know if Cuomo has spoken directly to specific people and said, you know, you really should donate to their cause because their interests line up exactly with mine. We know very little about that because Cuomo doesn't disclose it, and he hasn't even asked the group to be proactive and share it in the spirit of transparency. And what we don't know about the group. I mean,
we don't know.
You could fit that into the Grand Canyon, basically.
So this is just one of the stories this week about the Cuomo administration, right, and things we don't know. The other gets back to records from his time as Attorney General in New York during Troopergate. What's the story here? Lay this out for us about the archives and where records are.
So Troopergate was, ironically, a story about transparency. The governor at the time was Eliot Spitzer, and one of his political opponents, Republican Senate leader Joe Bruno, was using the state aircraft to travel around the state. And he would make a 5-minute stop at an official event in his capacity as a state senator. And then he would go and do fundraising, in essence, using a state resource for fundraising with a thin veneer of legitimacy. And what a reporter did was put in a FOIA request and say, where is he going? What is the schedule? What is all this business with the airplane? And what Cuomo's people – what Spitzer's people did was – helped create a record that had not existed before and provide that in response to a FOIA request.
So this is between Spitzer and Bruno at this point.
Right.
So where does Cuomo come in?
Cuomo comes in because Bruno says, you had the state police trail me and create a record that never existed before. You had them spying on me. We need someone to come in and figure out who's acting appropriately and who's not. The attorney general at the time, Andrew Cuomo, who steps in. And he speaks to a number of people and conducts an investigation. And he finds Spitzer at fault. He finds Joe Bruno's use of the airplane inappropriate, but he also finds Spitzer at fault. And it helps start a tailspin for Eliot Spitzer politically that he never really recovered from.
The issue this week, though, is trying to find the paper trail of what Andrew Cuomo actually found out. Reporters have been at work at this recently.
Right. There was a New York Times reporter who said, once Cuomo became governor, he sent his paperwork from his attorney general days into the state archive. This New York Times reporter, Danny Hakim, sent in a FOIA request and said, archives, do you have anything from this Troopergate incident? And he was told, no, It turns out Times Union reporters went down there and actually discovered they did have it. And once those reporters found it, Cuomo sent two aides to go down there and pull it back.
One of which is from his press office.
Exactly. One of his communication officers, Josh Blasto. And what Cuomo's people had said is there was sensitive material on there. People cooperated with an investigation under the notion that their names would not be revealed. This document, an internal document, was revealing those names. Therefore, it should not be made public. And it was made public in error. What the Times Union did was obtain the document and they published it. And what was revealed in the document, I mean, you could argue it was nothing worth hiding because the people who spoke voluntarily. They spoke not under oath, and the matter is now closed. So there was an argument that the Times Union had for making that information public. Cuomo's people disagreed. The New York Post strongly sided with Cuomo in this issue. But you have an instance of Cuomo looking to prevent people from seeing some of the inner workings of what he does.
And the governor's office was quite strong in their response to this. They told the New York Times, this is just Elliot and his minions still trying to vindicate Elliot, speaking of former Governor Spitzer. That's pretty harsh.
It's pretty harsh considering the fact that they've also taken a position of not responding to Elliot Spitzer, who now is a weekly commentator on New York One. So it's interesting how they want to ignore him, but they sort of can't. And what's amazing is that you can look at instances of Cuomo not being forthcoming in some areas when it comes to transparency. When he was attorney general, I struggled to get access to his schedule, which after much hemming and hawing, they finally did. And it seems to be not something they've kept up with. And apparently it's a little bit difficult to get a hold of his schedule from his attorney general days, even now. The letter that you referenced that he wrote to he wrote one to the Times Union. He also wrote one to the New York Times laying out his position in detail, whether or not it was on point is a whole other matter. They didn't reveal that letter for months. People had to foil the letter he sent to a newspaper. Hmm. There's something that doesn't ring true in the spirit of transparency when they look at these instances.
Well, I have two questions. So the first is there's all this chatter about Governor Cuomo's political ambitions. How much of this is trying to manage his reputation and manage what is available to opposition researchers, assuming there's another campaign in the future, perhaps a national campaign? And how much of this is, you know, when he was campaigning, he talked about backroom deals in Albany. You know, we need to shine light on those. But he's emerged from a lot of backroom deals with deals. And so, you know, perhaps political debate out in the, you know, public and on cable news doesn't result in the kind of deals that you can get when you get in a room, don't invite the press in, and come out with a compromise.
You know, there's a great reluctance with some people to have a C-SPAN-like government where you have a camera in every room and everyone's always speaking under the microscope and every utterance is a YouTube classic moment waiting to happen. There is something to be said about that being problematic. You can just look at the props that Congress members use on the floor of the Congress when they speak. You sort of don't need all of them.
When no one's in the audience. Except for the camera.
It's a great moment to speak triumphantly. Cuomo has definitely put an emphasis on being effective, on making things work. There's been a lot of debate about a lot of issues, Tappan Zee Bridge, taxing, and so forth. Results. Get something done. And he's managed to do that with great effect. The problem with the quote-unquote backroom deals is that there seems to be a lack of understanding about what he does and says to people to convince them to go along with a lot of these policy decisions. You could look at redistricting. You could look at how he got Senate Republicans to put the issue of same-sex marriage on the floor, even though a majority of them didn't agree with it. Lo and behold, a little while later, Cuomo does a surprising move on redistricting and signs off on a deal that Republicans liked. And because for some people, enough transparency, you're left with this idea that there's something happening out of view that you should know. And it's hard for someone like Cuomo, who is trying to manage his image, as all elected officials do, to sort of dispel that. The idea that he avoids traveling outside of New York and avoids even traveling to Washington, D.C. on what could be considered legitimate business, only draws more attention to the idea that he might be running for president in 2016. And the more he takes steps that are so out of step with what other people expect him to be doing, feeds into this notion. He's barely making an appearance at the Democratic National Convention, which is a striking contrast to what he did 4 years ago, in part because he's saying, I need to come back to New York. There's a lot of things to do. But it also gives people the impression that there's a political motive behind it, that Obama's in a tough race. It's not as popular for Democrats to be seen with him. And here's Cuomo, who's moderate, who has great numbers, great popularity numbers among Republicans and independents. Why would he want to get associated in a political scene like that any more than he has to?
We should mention his popularity numbers. I mean, about 73% approval here in New York. So the press corps is complaining about his, you know, this penchant for secrecy and that it makes him suspicious
for the way he operates, or reporters. And you know what? Reporters vote in very small numbers compared to the general public that cares about taxes, that cares about, you know, schools and public safety.
This is Ozzie Pabra from Capital New York. We're talking about Governor Cuomo. I want to ask you about the yogurt summit before we go. The governor wants to foster yogurt makers here in the state. When I was out in swing states, I saw those ads during the Olympics and felt that New York pride. It's interesting, though, Pepsi's a partner in one of the yogurt plants. Is this another place where Bloomberg and Cuomo are going to have a little tension?
I'm sure there's a public health angle that the Bloomberg people can find in it. But anything where Cuomo gets to come in and provide something that New Yorkers want in abundance, that seems to be good policy and good politics.
And as far as the DNC, you mentioned that Governor Cuomo, the Democratic National Committee, is going to have a very small role. He's only going for one day. The New York Magazine, in newyorkmag.com, mentioned, their headline was something like, he's going to show up in a fedora and funny glasses. He's going to try to have that low-key of a role in comparison to his father, who...
Right.
You know, the idea stepped out on the national stage too quickly and it hurt his political sort of ability to maneuver here in New York. Is that how you see what's happening?
That's how Cuomo and some of the people around him have seen it. Obviously, Andrew Cuomo was an advisor to his dad, saw a lot of this up front. But if you're a Democrat, if you're rooting for Obama to win, if your home state governor is the most popular governor in the state, and you see him not taking a bigger role, not getting out there, and even talking to the New York media about how great Obama is, it makes you wonder sometimes. It makes you curious as to what are the politics here. But at the end of the day, when most people care about their taxes, they care about whether or not they're going to have a job, they care about whether or not there's enough, you know, New York Greek yogurt to have, that stuff seems to matter a little bit less. And if Cuomo's popularity numbers stay as high as they are, reporters can grumble as much as they want and he can ride off into the sunset or to any office he wants as long as those popularity numbers are the way they are.
Those popularity numbers are above 70%, but only 36% of New Yorkers think Governor Cuomo should run for president.
That's until the ads start running. That's until people start focusing on the race. And that's until people start realizing, wait, that senator from over there might run? No way. So the race hasn't even come into fruition. And Hillary Clinton, her possible entrance into the race is still a looming specter. So until that happens, you know, all these numbers sort of go up and down.
So that's enough talk about the presidential race 4 years from now. We've got the one to get through right now. Ozzie Pabra from Capital New York, thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Up next, we talked to Deputy Mayor Linda Gibbs about that Goldman Sachs deal with the city to try to lower recidivism at Rikers. This is The Brian Lehrer Show. I'm Anna Sale.